Hey,
are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Car New, and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denny.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctive, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life. Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob, welcoming you to another edition of Fibber McGee and Molly. Before I get to the episode, I wanted to talk a little bit about, at the time of this recording, it's February 15th. 2021, and let me start off by saying I had a great weekend. I was invited and I joined the International Jack Benny Fan Club for their celebration of Jack's birthday, since his birthday fell on Sunday. For the entire weekend, they had a Jack Benny convention. Now, I'd never been to one before, and I thought it was kind of unique, and it was all virtual. So it was all done through Zoom, but the panels were great. There must have been about 20 panels for the whole three-day affair, and let me tell you, it was a lot of fun, and the panels were interesting. I got to see Jack Benny's grandchildren, and also Joan Benny also made an appearance. She's proud of her grandchildren very much, you could tell. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, on Yesterday USA, Walden Hughes is going to interview Joan Benny for his show, and I think that's going to be happening on Saturday. I'll get more information about that later, and I'll bring that to you. So that's by listening to her. She was calling in by phone while her grandkids were could be seen through Zoom, and it was really a great time. I have to thank Laura Leibowitz, who I've known for about 30 years, and I met her when she came out from Indiana to California some 30 years ago. She was pretty young then, and but she had graduated from college, and she had a job interview lined up, which I believe she got, and in the San Francisco Bay Area. And a very astute young lady. She knows everything and just about everything there is to know about Jack Benny. And she's an encyclopedia of facts about Jack Benny. And Laura has written about three books on Jack Benny, three or four books. I think it's four books on Jack Benny, which are a compendium of everything that Jack did from radio and television, including anyone and everyone who had participated in any of those shows. Wonderful person. I was proud to meet her again after all these years. It was really great seeing her. And the number of people were really quite helpful. helpful. If you watch any of Buck Benny's YouTube channels, you see Kathy Fuller Seeley on his podcast on YouTube. And she was with us for most of the convention. And she's unearthing more facts than I thought anyone could ever about Jack Benny. But she intends on, after the pandemic, to travel to New York and to other places to hunt down stuff about Jack Benny and maybe even some more programs that are lost to collectors. And if anyone can do it, Kathy Fuller Seeley can do it. She is a very knowledgeable young lady. And everyone that hosted the show did really great. I met Big John Nair, who basically was engineering the whole thing, and Zach. He did a great job in some of the panels, and Laura did some panel work also. She did a great job. She interviewed the daughter of Rochester, and she was a little shy at first, but Laura got her to warm up to what was going on, and she showed to Rochester's daughter that we genuinely were interested in what she had to say, and she opened up pretty quickly, thanks to Laura. So I'm grateful for that, and a bunch of other people showed up, and it was really great. I just can't remember everybody that was there, but it was 20 panels, and it was really a fun three-day holiday. So anyway, let's get back to Fibber and Molly. This is a very odd episode of Fibber and Molly. It's from December 31st, 1946, New Year's Eve. And it's a New Year's Eve party hosted by Fred Waring. And Fibber McGee and Molly and Harlow Wilcox and the entire cast and the entire band are missing. It is Fred Waring and his 67 Pennsylvanians hosting the show. And I suspect this had something to do with Johnson's Wax, since the entire cast had to work Christmas Day. I think that they needed a much-needed rest, so Fred Waring takes over. So, but it should be pretty good show. I hope you listen to it. And after that, it's My Favorite Husband from December 30th, 1950, and Liz is suffering from something called the phlegm jabs. And find out what that's about. And Our Miss Brooks from December 3rd, 1950. And it comprises something about Conklin's tuba. I didn't know he was musical. And after that is The Halls of Ivy from February 6th, 1952. The episode is entitled Glee Club Donations. And after that is You Bet Your Life from May 31st, 1950. And the secret word is book. Enjoy all those, and I'll see you all back here next week. Enjoy.
From the Johnson's Wax people, and from Fibber McGee and Molly, a sincere good wish for your new year, expressed in music by Fred Waring and his Pennsylvanians.
We're gonna ride.
It's New Year's Eve, the night of music celebration, and the makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present a brilliant half hour of music with Fred Waring and his Pennsylvanians. And here's your host, ready, riding, and shining for Johnson's Wax, Fred Waring.
Hello, everybody. Hello, and thanks for coming. That was Bill Bivens who greeted you, and this is Fred Waring with 67 Pennsylvania noisemakers and music we hope you'll all enjoy. We're proud that the Johnson's Wax Company invited us to pinch hit for Fibber McGee and Molly and bring this special New Year's greeting to their vast family of friends across the nation. This is a happy reunion for the Pennsylvanians, having been with you and the Johnson's Wax people all last summer. So come to the party, everybody. It's a night of reservations and resolutions. Fun without reservations, and so far as resolutions are concerned, bring your own so you can break them early. Our own resolution tonight, anyway, is just a plain, complicated, Zip-a-dee-doo-dah. Enjoyed that, sitting at home this New Year's Eve with Fibber as he cracks jokes and walnuts. Now, Bill Bivens, make Harlow Wilcox proud of you.
Well, just a few words to say about the coming New Year. If you'd like to make your kitchen a brighter, more cheerful place to work in all next year, remember that good old friend of your floors, Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat. Regular Glow Coat care not only gives your linoleum a really beautiful shine, it freshens up the colors and brings out the original gay pattern. Makes your whole kitchen clean and bright. You know, of course, how easy Glow Coat is to use. You just apply it, then let it dry. That's all. There's no rubbing or buffing. Glow Coat shines as it dries. Remember that in 1947, will you? And for brighter floors and a brighter kitchen, Johnson Self-Polishing Glow Coat.
Eve is Broadway's birthday. Tonight, as on no other night of the year, the roar of the city has a special meaning. Its rhythm, an invitation to excitement. Its words, an invitation to gaiety. Your Manhattan Serenade.
Part of this, make you feel it, take you
acquaintance be forgot. New Year's Eve does bring memories of old times, doesn't it? Pennsylvania spent so many with you.
How many, Fred?
How many? Why, Bill?
Not to embarrass you, but...
What isn't that? I just hadn't... Fred Cully, how many New Year's Eves have we worked together?
Are you kidding?
No. How many?
Well, let's see. My oldest daughter graduated from college in...
Would you settle for 20?
That's conservative.
And that's diplomacy.
And so all these years, while people were running up and down Broadway with paper hats and horns, why, you folks have been playing somewhere all lang syne.
Always. Listen, Bill. Hear that? Know what it is?
Why, sure, it's New Year's Eve on Broadway.
1 million people being happy. You know why?
Why? Do I know why they're happy?
Yes.
Well, Fred, that's to say that they're...
I don't either, but I bet I find out.
How?
Just get down and ask him.
You mean go right down there to Times Square?
Yes.
Tonight?
Yes, right now. Let's go.
For 20 years, we sing Auld Lang Syne, and now we gotta find out why.
Oh, Bill, here's some youngsters harmonizing. Let's ask them.
Well, why not? Hey, kids, you're singing, we're Fred Waring and we,
Yeah, so?
Well, we were enjoying your traditional Scottish air.
Our what?
Your application of the modern harmonic idiom to traditional balladry.
Well, I'll tell you, mister. In the early Carafa sold the Sorophon, the best minds hold the tenor Felignon of France, St. Perrine, on the fifth of Rachel and Glein. Now can we sing?
Sing. Don't go in there, Bill. That's the Union League Club. Here comes the butler.
Oh, I don't care what it is. I got it.
Gentlemen, what is it you wish?
Well, we're Fred Waring, and
we want to know how you're celebrating New Year's Eve.
Personally, I have a small red horn, which I sound at 30-minute intervals. The gentlemen, however, are listening to a musicale of two pianos.
Look up there in front of that record shop. That's something.
Hey, girls dancing. Man, are they having a time.
Hey, girls. Oh, girls.
Hi, Squares. What goes?
Well, we're Fred Waring.
Oh, I can't feel it. The most old-fashioned cat. Lift these eggs close. Take it from the top, mister.
Well, we want to know what you're celebrating.
Don't be an E-flat. New Year's, don't. 1947. What do you want, 1927?
Come to think of it, maybe you got something there.
Good old acquaintance, be forgot, and never brought to mind. Dog Land, isn't it?
That's right. Probably the most famous dance spot in America.
Oh, my aching dogs. Listen, I couldn't drag one foot after her.
Why, Willie Bibbins, where did you come from?
Well, looky here now, doggone. If it ain't little Sally Watson from down home. Happy little old New Year, honey.
And me just pining for a dance in Mayan.
Well, honey, that's what you pine no more.
Should old acquaintance be forgotten?
Killing me, Fred.
Stop, Bill. In here where the light's burning. It's an old friend. Best shoemaker in New York.
Well, now, he ought to have a place to sit down.
He has. Hello, Jim.
Why, hello, Fred. Come in.
We're
Bill Bivens, and we'd like to sit down.
Help yourself. Throw the cat out of the big chair.
Thanks.
Man, oh, man.
You're not celebrating this year, Jim.
Me? Sure I'm celebrating. Look, I got paper streamers, new calendar, radio going.
Oh, I mean outside, crowds, trick hats, horns.
Not anymore, Fred. Last few years, I've sort of celebrated inside, I guess you'd call it.
Oh, we've been trying all evening to find out what people are so happy about.
Of course, they didn't know.
No, do you? What are you celebrating with your paper streamers and your new calendar?
Oh, a lot of little things that mean something to me. Nothing you'd write a song about, like love or world peace. Things like, well, tulips, maybe.
Tulips? You, Jim?
Yeah, tulips. Kid brought me some bulbs from Holland. Me, I never seen one before, so I looked them up. They grow red and yellow and white. You can't tell by the bulbs, they all look alike. But the kid says they're tulips, and the book says that's how they look. So I picked a spot in the alley back of the shop and put them in. You know, Fred, I think about them tulips all the time. Thinking how they're going to look and wondering which will be which.
So you're the tulip king of 8th Avenue and you celebrate.
Tonight? Yes. New Year's Eve is like that. Like them bulbs of mine. Sure, maybe in April I'll have to dig them up and find them still looking like a dime's worth of dried onion. But tonight they're red. Yellow and white. Midnight tonight don't separate different years any more than any other night. But being people, we've got to have a beginning and an end to things. So we fixed ourselves a brand new beginning every year. New bulbs. Another chance for the fine red and yellow and white things we wanted and didn't get. Can't you see, Fred? Those people out there aren't silly or crazy. They're celebrating the finest thing God ever gives a fellow. A new hope for tomorrow.
A new hope for tomorrow.
When you walk through a storm, keep your chin up high. And don't be afraid of the dark.
Thank you.
And now, Bill Bivens for Johnson's Wax.
Thank you, Fred. I would like to remind our audience about the excellent protection that Johnson's No Rubbing, No Buffing Glow Coat gives to linoleum and other floors. I do know that above anything else, you want your floors to look nice. And, of course, Glow Coat is wonderful for giving your floors a really bright shine. But you see, the same lovely Glow Coat shine that gives your floors such beauty also protects them against wear and scuffing shoes. So, with regular Glow Coat care, your linoleum keeps new looking years longer. This wax protection saves you work, too. Build things and dirt wipe up so easily and quickly. Try Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat, won't you? It's easy to apply. There's no rubbing or buffing. It shines as it dries. In 20 minutes, your floors are all ready to walk on and shining beautifully.
So to all of us with our paper hats and horns or up here singing Auld Lang Syne, 2 years does mean a new hope for, as Jim would put it, the fine red and yellow and white things we've wanted and haven't had. Let's hope they lie just ahead, beyond the blue horizon.
Beyond the blue horizon, waits a beautiful day.
Goodbye to things that mourn me.
Joy is waiting for me.
Life has only begun. Beyond the blue horizon lies a
rising sun. Blow it away, blow away, blow away the past. Blow it in anywhere, I don't care how fast.
On from the darkness into dawn, from the rain to the rainbow, fly with me. Gone, gone, all my grief and woe, no matter where I go, if I am free.
Thanks again for coming. Here's to your very happy new year, and we're glad the Johnson's Wax people called on us to express it musically for them. Fibber McGee and Molly, and Don Kim, and all of the folks at 79 Wistful Vista. Fibber and Molly will be back answering the door chime next week at this same time. And when you care to call on us, We're on the air every morning over NBC. Now, with a low bow to the arrangers, Simeon, Ringwald, Adrian Gerhardt, soloist Gordon Goodman, Jack Goff, Jane Wilson, Maureen Gerhardt, and all the Pennsylvanians, may there be music, gladness, and all good things in your new year. May it be tops. And as for us, all through 1947, we're going to ride, ride, ride.
We're gonna ride.
Good night and Happy New Year.
This is Bill Bivens speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Products of Home and Industry, inviting you to tune in Trevor McGee and Molly as usual next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Chicago, WMAQ.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Jello, everybody.
Yes, it's the Gay Family series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning. Transcribed and brought to you by the Jell-O family of Red Letter Desserts.
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O puddings.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O Taft. Fiocca puddings. Yes, sirree.
And now Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper, two people who live together and like it. And now let's look in on the Coopers. It's evening, and Liz and George are sitting in the living room admiring their Christmas tree.
George, you know, I think this is the prettiest Christmas tree we ever had.
Yeah, it's a nice one, all right. But I was wondering if we shouldn't take it down tonight.
Take it down? George, it isn't even New Year's.
Oh, but Liz, look at it. The needles are falling off, the branches are drooping. Oh, it looks pretty sad.
Well, you'd look pretty sad, too, if you had your trunk stuck in a bucket for 3 weeks.
Well, the least we can do is put away our presents from under the tree.
Okay. Gee, wasn't it a wonderful Christmas, George? I got every single thing I wanted.
Yeah, so did I, honey.
You know, now that it's all over, I want to tell you about something I almost bought for you, but it was too expensive.
Oh? What was that?
A set of matched golf clubs.
Hey, really?
Yeah.
Well, Liz, I appreciate the thought, but that would have meant a lot of money.
Well, that's what I thought. And I just said to myself, after all, it isn't the gift, it's the thought behind it that counts.
Well, that's true, dear.
I knew you'd understand.
As long as we're having postmortems, there's something I almost bought for you, but didn't because it was too expensive.
Oh, what was it?
A mink jacket.
A mink jacket?
Yeah. I saw it in the window at Miller's, and it would have looked so great on you.
A mink jacket?
But it cost so much money, I really couldn't afford it, so I just decided like you did. It isn't the gift, it's the thought behind it that counts.
Since when?
I knew you'd understand.
All my life I've wanted a mink jacket, and I've never had one. I've never had a fur coat at all, not even a rabbit-dyed imitation skunk.
Well, honey, I didn't know it meant that much to you, but, well, it's too late now.
No, it isn't. Look, George, take all my other presents back. I don't care if I have another thing, if I can just have a mink jacket.
No, that still wouldn't be enough money.
Even if we took your presents back, too?
No.
But, George, that little jacket is just exactly what I need to wear to the Atterbury's New Year's Eve party.
Well, I'm sorry, honey.
Well, actually, I need it, George. I don't have a thing to wear.
Well, then it's simple. You can go as the New Year.
Oh, you...
What's the matter, Mrs. Cooper? You've been moping.
I didn't get a mink jacket for Christmas.
Oh? Well, if it'll make you feel any better, I didn't get one either.
You don't understand. George almost bought me one, but he decided it was too expensive. Oh, it's terrible to have been so close. I can almost feel it.
Well, maybe he'll give you one next year.
Maybe. Only I wanted it to wear to the Atterbury's New Year's party. Darn it. Now that George has the idea of getting me a coat, I certainly hate to see it slip away.
It's a shame, all right.
Katie, you've watched me get things out of George for a long time. What method would work best?
Well, crying is always effective.
No, that's only good for traffic tickets, overdrawn bank accounts, and crumpled fenders. I've done a lot of research on that.
How about smooching?
Uh-uh. I get so carried away with the smooching, I forget what I'm after. Well, I guess I'm dead. Wouldn't that make you sick?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I just said it. That's what I'll be.
Dead?
No, sick. George always buys me what I want when I'm sick. When my temperature goes up, his resistance goes down.
It certainly does.
I guess I'll have to come down with Liz Cooperitis.
Oh?
Now, no matter what I do, Katie, don't be frightened.
Do you think you really should go through with that?
Yes. I know it's being mean, but all's fair in love and mink.
Gee, that was a good dinner, honey.
Oh, it certainly was.
What would you like to do tonight?
Oh, I don't care. Want to go to a movie? Harvey with James Stewart is playing at the Strand.
Sounds good. Is there another feature?
Yeah. The second picture's called...
Who's in it? Liz, are you sick?
If I weren't, would I be groaning like this?
Well, what's the matter?
Oh, I don't know. I just had a strange pain. Ah!
Well, gee, honey, I wonder what caused it.
I don't know. I was just sitting here when suddenly... Ah! There it is again.
Oh, Liz, come on, let me help you.
Ah!
Oh. Here, stretch out on the couch.
Yeah, I guess I better.
Oh, what seems to be the trouble?
Well, it's... Oh!
Where does it hurt?
Well, it was in my left foot at first. Then it was my right knee. And just a minute ago, it was in my head.
Well, my goodness, is there anything I can do, honey?
Oh, no. I remember now. I used to have these attacks when I was a child.
Oh?
I'll go up to bed and suffer in silence.
Oh, well, wait a minute. Doesn't anything help?
No. Well, there might be something. I remember the doctor said to give me little presents. You know, anything I wanted, just to make me happy.
Oh. Yes. I think I'm beginning to understand your disease a little better.
Well, that's good.
And I know just what I should get for you.
You do?
Yes, excuse me, I want to make a phone call.
Oh, fine, dear. Now, don't worry about me. I'll be all right.
I'll be right back.
Katie,
would you go in and stay with Mrs. Cooper while I make a phone call? She's ill.
Yes, of course, Mr. Cooper. Oh, you poor thing. What seems to be the trouble? Never mind, Mrs. Cooper. He can't hear you now.
Are you sure?
Yes. Did it work?
Katie, I can't believe it. It worked better than my wildest dreams. He's gone to make a phone call, and I think it's about the coat.
Really?
Oh, here he comes again.
Well, Liz, I think you're going to feel a lot better pretty soon.
Oh, you do? What's going to happen?
I call the doctor, and he'll be right out.
Well, mink jackets are lovely to look at, no doubt of it, but you can't eat them.
Whereas take Jell-O now, lovely to look at and delicious to eat. And you can make Jell-O a whole lot quicker than Liz is going to get that coat. Yes, with the swell new quick-setting method, you can have a beautiful finished Jell-O dessert in just about 1 hour. Dissolve your Jell-O in 1 cup of hot water. Then add 1 cup of ice cubes or crushed ice, filling the cup to the brim with water. Stir until the ice melts completely, then pop into the refrigerator to chill firm. And in just about 1 hour, you have a gorgeous, glamorous Jell-O dessert all ready to serve. All 6 delicious Jell-O flavors are chock full of wonderful fruit-like richness. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. And all 6 sparkling Jell-O colors are as gay and cheerful as New Year's Eve. So look for those big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O. And Jell-O spells a year-long treat. Yes, it's Jell-O for red letter desserts.
J-E-L-L-O.
And now back to Lucille Ball in My Favorite Husband. As we look in on the Coopers once again, Liz is pretending to be sick, and George, who is worried about her, has called the doctor.
Oh, hello, Dr. Stevenson. Come on in.
You sounded so mysterious on the phone, George. What's the matter with Liz?
Well, I'm not sure. I think she has a rare disease, the only cure for which is a mink coat.
Oh, I get it.
Well, this is the second time she's pulled this. The last time it was the flu. But I wanted a television set anyway.
I see. What do you want me to do?
Give her a good scare. Then maybe she'll quit doing this.
Leave it to me, George. I think I know how to handle this.
Good. Come on, she's in the bedroom. Liz, the doctor's here.
Oh, hello, Dr. Stevenson. I'm sorry George bothered you just to come and see me.
Now, Liz, don't you worry about that. When you're sick, that's when you need your doctor.
Well, but that's just it. I was feeling bad a little while ago, doctor. But the funniest thing, as soon as he called you, I felt better.
Now, let's not be hasty.
Oh, no, no, really, I feel fine. I think I'll get up and get dressed.
You know, don't move. Stay there in bed.
What do you mean?
You're a sick girl, Liz.
I am.
Your eyes, your color. Let me see your tongue.
Well, all right. What? What? What is it?
George, I wish you'd called me sooner. It may be too late.
Too late?
George, I'd better speak to you out in the hall.
Very well. Doctor.
No. No, is something really wrong with me? Tell me, I can take it.
Frankly, Liz, it looks to me like you have a severe case of the flim jabs.
The flim jabs?
Yes, it's a rare tropical disease from the West Indies.
Oh.
Gee, Liz, this is awful.
Well, how serious is it, doctor?
Well, I might as well be honest with you. If it gets any worse, we may have to operate.
Operate?
Yes. We'll have to go in and take out your torkle.
My torkle? No. There's nothing wrong with my torkle.
Now, there's no use getting alarmed. A lot of people live for years without a torkle.
They do? Well, is it painful?
No, no. We anesthetize thoroughly for a torkelectomy. Of course, you'll never be able to yammle again.
I won't.
Well, tell me, doctor, will you have to remove the whole torkle?
Well, maybe we'll be lucky and can save half of it. After all, half a torkle is better than none.
Well, I should say so. I hate to think of never yammling again. What's
hameling.
It's an involuntary peristalsis of the transverse clavis.
Oh.
Well, tell me, Doctor, is there anything we can do for her?
All we can do is wait. The crisis should be passed in 24 hours. Just wait and hope she doesn't turn green.
Green?
Yes. That's the real danger sign.
Well, what happens then?
If you turn green, 3 hours later, gone.
Gone?
Gone.
Oh, my poor Liz. Oh, come on now, honey. Let's be my big, brave girl.
I am being brave.
Well, I've got to be going along.
I'll see you to the door, Doctor.
And now, Liz.
Yes?
You stay in bed and drink lots of water and fruit juice.
All right.
And I'll see you tomorrow at this same time. I hope.
Mrs. Cooper, are you awake? And Mrs. Atterbury's here to see you.
Liz, girl, how are you?
Hello, Iris.
Just ring if you want me.
George told me about you, girl. I'm on my way to the Bridge Club, and I thought I'd drop by and see you.
Well, thank you, Iris. It was good of you to take the time.
Well, after all, girl, I'm your best friend. And anyway, I had to find out what you had so I could make a full report to the girls.
Well, you might as well know, Iris. I've got the phlegm jabs.
The phlegm jabs? What's that?
It's a rare tropical disease.
Oh, how exciting! Oh, this will make Betty Rickey's gallstones look sick. Well, she'll be absolutely green.
She's not the only one.
What?
That's one of the danger signs. I may turn green.
She lives. With a green face and your red hair, you'll be out of this world.
That's what I'm afraid of. Iris, if I turn green, 3 hours later, gone.
Gone?
Gone.
You mean gone as in to your reward?
That's right.
Liz, I can't believe it. How did you catch this flim-flam or whatever it is anyway?
Who knows? I was only pretending at first. George didn't want to buy me a mink coat, and I wanted one so badly to wear to your party that I acted
No. Not that stale sympathy routine.
Yes. I pretended to be sick, and the next thing I knew, I had the flim jabs. On to your bridge party.
Oh, I wouldn't go and leave you, girl, but I can't help it. I've got the ice cream out in the car and it's melting.
I understand.
Hello, George.
Hi, Doctor. Come on in.
How's our little patient? Is she all over the flim jabs?
Not exactly. She just turned green.
What? That's impossible. There is no such thing as flim jabs.
No, but there is such a thing as a green light bulb.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did. She's taking a nap. As soon as she fell asleep, I put a green bulb in the light in her room. Come on, let's go wake her up. Liz, the doctor's here.
Give me that. That's my Torkoal.
She's still asleep. Liz, wake up. The doctor's here.
What? Oh, gee, it's dark. Turn on the light, George.
All right. Well, Liz, how are you feeling?
Oh, just fine, doctor. I guess I've come through the 24-hour crisis without turning...
What's the matter?
Look at my hands. They're green.
You're right. They are.
And your face, too.
My face. Hand me a mirror, George.
Oh, here you are, my poor green darling.
Oh, my face and my hair. Wait a minute. You have the phlegm jabs, too.
What do you mean?
You're both green.
Us? Doctor, do I look green to you?
No.
But you're not green to me, either.
Oh, no. This is the end. I'm looking at the world through green-colored eyeballs.
Look, honey.
Oh, George. I'm going. This is it. I know it. Farewell, my love. Goodbye.
Now, Liz, don't get so upset.
I'm sorry, dear. It's just that I don't die every day and it's new to me.
Look, Liz, maybe we can still save you.
No. No, a person knows these things. I can feel it in my bones. Green bones, that is.
Liz, I have a confession to make.
So have I, George.
Well, but let me tell you mine first.
Well, no, George, let me. I won't be here as long as you will.
Well, all right.
George, from time to time I've smashed things on our car. Here a hood, there a fender, now a running board and occasionally a trunk. And I had them fixed and didn't tell you about it.
Yes, Liz?
In fact, the only thing left of the original car you bought is the ashtray in the back seat.
That's very interesting. Have you anything more to confess?
Yes. Last night when I said I was sick, I was only pretending so you'd get me a mink coat.
Liz, how could you?
Isn't that awful?
Aren't you ashamed?
Oh, yes, I am, George. I wish I was dead. Oh, no.
Honey, let me tell you my confession.
Go ahead, George. You wonderful husband, you.
Now, honey, you don't have the phlegm jabs. It's a trick the doctor and I played on you because I knew you were trying to get a mink coat.
Why, you big stinker!
Wait a minute. I'm still green.
I put a green light in the lamp.
George Cooper, you just wait till I get well. Oh, I forgot. I haven't been sick. I'll get it. Hello.
Is that you, Liz, girl?
Iris, are you crying?
I can't help it, girl. The whole bridge club's been bawling ever since I told them you were going to leave us tonight.
Oh, Iris, I'm going to be here a while longer.
Well, that's it, Liz. Be brave. Hang on to every precious minute.
Oh, Iris, don't cry. I'm going to be all right.
Well, you just keep saying that, Liz. We girls just had a little ceremony in your memory.
Memory? But Iris,
we turned your chair to the wall and smashed your cheek up in the fireplace.
Well, that's very sweet, Iris, but listen to me now.
Don't talk. Save your strength. Elizabeth Cooper, the whole club joins me in this tribute to you, our soon-to-be former member. Listen closely. There.
What was that?
10 seconds of silence.
Well, coming from that Gabby Bridge Club, that's a real tribute.
That's the way. I'll tell them you went with a joke on your lips.
Look, Iris.
Please let me finish. I may break down entirely. We took the whole treasury and bought you a goodbye present.
Now, Iris, listen to... What was it?
A mink coat.
A mink coat?
Yes, girl. We figured if you've got to go, we wanted you to go in style. I know how you must feel, girl. Goodbye. I'll see you tomorrow. I mean, goodbye.
What's the matter, Liz?
The girls in the club are giving me a mink coat.
Well, honey, isn't that what you wanted?
Yeah, but I have to die to get it.
Yes, Lucille, what's up tonight?
Tonight we play a couple of nomads lost in the desert. A little desert music, please, Wilbur.
Water! Water! I've been floundering on this desert for 3 days. Wait, I see something moving. Hello!
Hello, Blair.
I can't believe it.
What'd you say, Bob?
I said I can't believe my eyes. You're a human.
I am. Oh, I am.
Oh, my, glad to see you. I'm lost.
Well, I'm glad to see you. I'm Smith. Put her there.
No, I mean I'm lost. I don't know where I am.
You don't?
No.
Well, it's all right, Bub. I know where you are.
Oh, thank heavens. Where?
Right there.
Look, I'm trying to find my camp. It's right near a big dune.
A dune? What's a dune?
What's a dune?
Oh, I don't know. What's dune with you?
Wait. Look over there.
Where?
A mirage.
Where?
Over there.
Where?
I see palm trees.
Where?
And a little lake.
You do?
Yes, don't you?
No, I see a big bowl of jello.
How come?
I ain't being paid for seeing palm trees and lakes, that's how come.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. I see it too now.
Yeah, well, high time, Buster.
Of course I can see it. 6 big bowls of jello in those 6 delicious flavors.
Yeah.
Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. Jello with a flavor that's locked in so it can't get out till your first delicious spoonful.
Boy, when you see him, you really see him, don't you? What else, Bob?
Look for those big red letters on the box, for they spell jello, and jello spells a treat.
Nice work, Bob. Well, let's go home.
Go home?
Yeah.
We're lost in the desert.
Well, why don't we each take one of those cars?
What cars?
The ones over there. That's a 2-car Mirage. Good night, Bob.
You have been listening to My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, and based on characters created by Isabel Scott Rorick. Tonight's transcribed program was produced and directed by Jess Oppenheimer, who wrote the script with Madeline Pugh and Bob Carroll Jr. Original music was composed by Marlon Skiles and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The part of Katie, the maid, was played by Ruth Parrott.
Henry, what are you thinking about?
Why, that new instant Sanka coffee, dear. It certainly is wonderful.
Sure thing. Just look at the new richer coffee color. Taste the new full-bodied real coffee flavor. Discover how much less instant Sanka costs. And did you know the makers of instant Sanka make the only caffeine-free coffee? The kind that can't affect anybody's nerves or sleep. Try the new instant Sanka. It's wonderful.
Be sure to listen to Lucille Ball in My Favorite Husband again next week, presented by...
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O puddings.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tap. Tapioca puddings, yes, sirree.
The name Jell-O is a registered trademark of General Foods. Bob Lamond speaking.
This is CBS, the Star's Address, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, Madison High School instituted a course in automobile driving a short time ago, and our Miss Brooks, who teaches English there, was put in charge. She's had over a week to get used to her additional duties, but she still isn't very happy about them.
And why should I be? Most of the students who enroll in the course take one lesson and then drive as if they're on the Indianapolis Speedway. As a teacher, I've never minded marking my pupils, but I have a definite aversion to having them mark me. Last Thursday at breakfast, my landlady offered a few consoling remarks.
I know it's a lot of additional work, Connie, but think of the satisfaction involved. Not just to you, but to the entire profession.
You mean the medical profession?
No, the teaching profession. Look what you're doing to help the traffic problem.
Well, I have eased the traffic problem a bit. Since I started teaching, there are at least 10 fewer cars on the road.
It's not only traffic, Connie. Your students learn courtesy to pedestrians, too.
Oh, you're right about that, Mrs. Davis. That's one thing I absolutely insist on. Each of my pupils must take a half hour off to visit the hospital his particular pedestrian is in.
You can kid if you like, Connie, but you're doing a fine service, and you should enjoy doing it.
I wonder how you'd enjoy teaching a student like Stretch Snodgrass, Mrs. Davis.
Is it difficult for Stretch to drive a car?
It's difficult for Stretch to spell car. He almost got me into a real jam the other day. We got into some heavy traffic, and I asked him to let me have the wheel.
How did that get you into a jam?
He took it off and handed it to me. Oh, well, I'll get used to it, I suppose.
Of course you will. Now, you finish eating, Connie. I've got some chores to do out in the kitchen. Want any more of anything?
No, thanks. There are still some slices of French toast left over. I hate to see them wasted. That's Walter Denton. They won't be wasted. Come on in, Walter. The latch is off.
Miss Brooks, we who are about to die salute you.
Salute acknowledged. What do you want with your French toast, sugar or jam?
Oh, didn't you hear me, Miss Brooks? I am the bearer of extremely tragic tidings.
I'm sure they can wait until you've had a little breakfast. Now sit down.
All right. But I had one breakfast at home, and then I just stopped by Harriet Conklin's house, and she insisted I have another breakfast with her.
Oh, I see.
So I'll just eat a couple of these plain.
There you are, Walter. Now, don't try to talk while you're eating. I don't want to hear a word out of you until you're all finished.
So be it. It's like this, Miss Brooks. As you know, Miss Brooks, I am the manager of the Madison High School Orchestra. And as you also know, this is the weekend of the big music festival at Oakhurst, wherein high school bands from all over the state compete for a silver cup.
Go on.
Now, I'm well aware of the fact that you have your own problems, Miss Brooks, but you've always been interested in mine in the past, and it is my fond hope that you continue to be interested in them, especially this one. Are you interested, Miss Brooks?
I'm so interested, it frightens me. But please get to the point a little more rapidly, Walter.
Okay. The point is, our beloved principal, old Marblehead Conklin... I mean, Mr. Conklin, he insists on going on this trip and playing his tuba with the band.
Mr. Conklin wants to play with the band?
Yes, ma'am. I've stood for many things from that man, but his tuba is just too much for me to swallow.
Especially especially after three breakfasts. Walter, I didn't think faculty members were eligible to play in the band.
Well, they're not. But he thinks he can get by on a technicality. You see, Jason Brill, the principal of Clay City High, got special permission last year to do a violin solo with their band. And Mr. Conklin feels that anything Mr. Brill can do with his violin, he can do with his tuba.
I'd like to hear him try Flight of the Bumblebee.
It's no laughing matter, Miss Brooks. He sneaked into band practice so often lately that they're practically ruined. Unless they get to practice by themselves in Oakhurst, our chances for winning are sub-nil.
That's about as poor as chances can get. Is the band going up to Oakhurst after school today?
Yes, ma'am. And you've got to see that they go without Mr. Conklin and his 39 pounds of stale plumbing.
But why me, Walter?
Because someone very near and dear to your heart has the interest of the band very near and dear to his heart.
You mean?
None other.
Since when is Mr. Boynton so interested in music?
Well, since he bet Mr. DeWitt, my history teacher, that Madison would win the band contest.
But Mr. Boynton doesn't bet. He's opposed to gambling. He won't take a chance on anything. More's the pity.
Oh, he didn't bet money. Just a new hat.
Mr. Boynton doesn't wear hats, Walter.
The hat isn't for him. It's for you. He wants you to have it for Christmas. Of course, I just happened to be eavesdropping at the proper time. This is all a big surprise.
Yes, it is, wasn't it? I'd like to see the band win the contest, too, Walter. Hat or no hat, Mr. Boynton or no Mr. Boynton.
Let's not go overboard.
But what I'm trying to say, Walter, is this. How can we keep Mr. Conklin from playing in Oakhurst with the band?
There's only one way, Miss Brooks. By sabotaging his tuba. That's a very hard instrument to replace. After all, tubas don't grow on trees.
It's a good thing they don't. If Isaac Newton had been hit by a tuba instead of an apple, we wouldn't have any gravity today.
Hi, Miss Brooks. Going into Daddy's office?
Yes, Harriet. What kind of a mood is he in?
Very good for Daddy. He's practicing on his tuba. I just came out of his office.
With that wind behind you, I'll bet you came out faster than you went in.
Daddy got a new teacher last week. He's really working at it this time.
Who's he taking lessons from, Jack Benny?
No, ma'am. As close as I can recall, his teacher's name is Pendarvis T. Marleybone.
That's close enough.
Miss Brooks, I know that Daddy wants to play with our band in the contest, but confidentially, I don't think he'll help their chances any. So if you can think of any way...
I've been all through this with Walter Denton, Harriet. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a very important date.
A date?
Yes, with 39 pounds of stale plumbing. See you later, dear.
Good luck, Miss Brooks. Let me know how you come out.
Stick around. You might have to catch me.
Come in.
I know you're practicing, Mr. Conklin, and I don't like to disturb you,
That's
but...
very considerate, Miss Brooks. Good day.
But I couldn't help stopping by to wish you luck with the band contest.
Well... Thank you, Miss Brooks.
What selection have you chosen for your solo?
I thought I'd try something a little out of the ordinary for my particular instrument. The Flight of the Bumblebee. Do you think that would be effective?
Oh, yes, sir. That should really knock 'em deaf. Dead. Mr. Conklin, if I keep very quiet, would you mind letting me stand here and listen to you practice? There's time before my class begins.
I didn't know you were so interested in music, Miss Brooks.
Oh, yes, indeed. And the tuba's my favorite instrument.
Really? Since when?
Since I first heard you play one. I'll never forget that day, Mr. Conklin. It was about 6 weeks ago. I passed by the music room, and you were playing the beautiful Blue Danube.
But how can you remember so clearly?
The rest of the band was playing Kiss Me Again. That is, they soon realized their mistake, and you all played beautifully together. So much so, Mr. Conklin, that lately I've been thinking of taking up the tuba again.
Again?
Yes, sir. I took several lessons on it when I was a little girl.
But isn't a tuba an awfully heavy instrument for a little girl?
That's what my mother thought, so I took the lessons on a piccolo. I never did get anywhere, though. I guess there just wasn't any incentive. But now that I have a virtuoso right in the same school, well, would you give me a few pointers, Mr. Conklin?
Well, Miss Brooks, I...
who played the tuba with the Philharmonic. I could ask him, I suppose, but I figure why take lead when you can get platinum?
Oh, you're so right. What would you like to know, my dear?
Well, I'm afraid we'll have to start with the fundamentals. It's been months since I was a little girl. How do you hold the tuba, maestro?
Here, I'll show you. Just take it in your left arm.
Like this?
Not quite. Hold it more as if it were a baby. There. Have you got it? Have you got a firm grip on it?
No, sir. Oh, dear, I've ruined your wonderful tuba.
Oh, let's see it. Oh, thank goodness there's no damage done. None whatsoever.
I guess I was pressing. Please, Mr. Conklin, could I take another crack at it? I mean... would you show me the proper way to hold it?
But I've told you, Miss Brooks, hold it like you would a baby.
Like this?
Yes, yes, only not so high. And you've got to have such a much firmer... careful, Miss Brooks! If that's how you'd hold a baby, it's a good thing you're not a nurse.
Is your beautiful tuba ruined this time?
Yes, Miss Brooks, it is. There's a big crack in the bell, and the mouthpiece is jammed into the horn. It'll take a week to repair it.
Oh, then you won't be able to play in the contest tomorrow.
Oh, yes, I will. I can borrow a tuba from a friend of mine in Oakhurst. Fortunately, his instrument is out of your reach. 450 miles from here.
I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Conklin. Darn these short arms.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream. It cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
Colgate toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
More than 2 years' research showed the Colgate way of brushing teeth right after eating helps stop more decay for more people than ever before reported in dentifrice history. Yes, the Colgate way stopped tooth decay best, better than any other home method of oral hygiene.
No other dentifrice, ammoniated or not, has proof of such results. And you should know that Colgate's, while not mentioned by name, was the one and only toothpaste used in the research on tooth decay recently reported in Reader's Digest.
So always follow the Colgate way to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and stop tooth decay best.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
By the time I met Mr. Boynton in the cafeteria for lunch, I still hadn't thought of a way to keep Mr. Conklin from playing with the band. Just before I went up to get my dessert, I told Mr. Boynton of my dilemma, hoping he might be able to help. As always, he paid rapt attention to what I was saying, then came up with a brilliant suggestion.
Why not try the cherry pie today, Miss Brooks?
Either you haven't been listening, or I've been talking through my lima beans. What I'm trying to say, Mr. Boynton, is that so far, Mr. Conklin is still going to perpetrate his tuba with the school band.
Well, there must be something we can do to stop him. This means quite a bit to me, personally.
Really? In what way, Mr. Boynton?
Well, I'm unalterably opposed to gambling, as you know, but in this instance, I did make a small wager with Mr. DeWitt that our school would win the Oakhurst contest.
A wager? You didn't.
It's just the price of a new hat.
Oh, what a cute idea. How much does the bet amount to in cash?
Oh, it isn't important, really. Just the thought behind it that counts.
That's very true, but just for kicks, how much money is at stake?
Well, $2.
Seems like enough. I can surely get a one propeller job for that. But to get back to Mr. Conklin, Walter told me in class that the band was going up in individual cars.
And Mr. Conklin's going in one of them?
No, Walter's seen to it that each car is completely filled with students and instruments. There's just no room for Mr. Conklin.
Well, that's promising. His own car was pretty badly banged up last week, wasn't it?
Yes, but it's in the school auto shop and should be ready today.
Should it?
Yes, it shouldn't. Say, you might have an idea there, Mr. Boynton.
Who's been working on his car, Miss Brooks?
Probably someone very competent, but Stretch Snodgrass also spends a lot of time in the shop.
And Stretch Snodgrass isn't the most brilliant student at school, is he?
No, Stretch Snodgrass isn't the most brilliant student at school.
Stretch Snodgrass may not be the most brilliant, but he's sure loaded with charm.
Well, just the fellow we wanted to see. Pull up a chair, Stretch.
Yes, take this chair right here.
In a minute. I ain't et yet.
Please, Stretch. I haven't eaten yet.
Well, you're on a diet. I ain't. Gosh, I can't decide what to take today. I'm in a real mental quarry.
Please, one marblehead in school is enough.
What's the reason for your quandary, Stretch?
I can't decide whether to take the chicken a la king, the lamb stew, or the meatloaf.
Why don't you wait till tomorrow and take the corned beef hash? Then you'll get all three.
Say, that's a swell idea. Wait till tomorrow and get all three. Boy, you sure got plenty brains up there in your chromium.
My chromium?
Yeah. You know, your gray matter. I'll bet you got some twisty curves in your cerebellum.
Well, I guess my Sarah's as curvy as the next one. But Stretch, what we wanted to ask you about was Mr. Conklin's car.
Yes, is it all ready to roll?
Sure. What do you want me to roll it?
This boy is psychic. Now, we've got to be careful. Now, when Mr. Conklin lets us use his car for Madison's new driving class last week, it got pretty badly banged up, didn't it, Stretch?
But now that it's all fixed, it could be used to give one more lesson, couldn't it?
And what better pupil could we have to take the lesson than Stretch? I'll meet you out front in 10 minutes.
Not so fast, Miss Brooks. First, I gotta eat.
Of course you do. And I want you to eat a nice, leisurely meal, Stretch. But there's one thing I want to tell you before you bolt down a sandwich. When you go to the garage to get the car, be sure and back it out carefully.
Okay, Miss Brooks. I'll see you in front of the school in about 10 minutes.
Now be sure and back it out of the garage, Stretch.
I will.
Well, Miss Brooks, if you're meeting Stretch in 10 minutes, you better get your dessert.
Oh, there's no hurry, Mr. Boynton. I don't think I'll have to give Stretch a lesson if he obeys instructions.
What do you mean?
You heard me tell him to back the car out of the garage, didn't you?
Yes.
Well, after the accident the other day, I backed it in.
Miss Brooks, Mr. Boynton, I don't like to disturb your lunch, but I gotta talk to you.
We're all finished, Walter. What is it?
Well, I just came from the school garage. Mr. Conklin's been in to look at his car.
How did he find it?
He just scraped the back wall with a penknife, and there it was. Stretch Snodgrass did something horrible again.
Good old Stretch. Now Mr. Conklin won't be able to drive up for the band contest.
That's what you think. He's going on the 6 p.m. train. He'll be there first thing in the morning.
But that'll be disastrous. If he gets to practice with the band, we're sunk.
Don't I know it?
Miss Brooks, we've got to put our heads together.
You're right, Mr. Boynton. Goodbye, Walter.
Please, Miss Brooks, you've got to concentrate on the immediate problem. Your long-range aims can wait. I mean, you just got to keep Mr. Conklin from making that train.
Yes, but how?
Well, I don't know. All I know is he says he never sleeps very well on trains, so he's going home right after school and take a nap.
A nap? Wait a minute, I think I've got something. Come closer, Mr. Boynton.
Yes, Miss Brooks?
Still closer.
Like this?
Goodbye, Walter. Here's the idea. If he's going to take a nap, maybe we can set the clocks back in his house so that when he wakes up, he'll think it's much earlier and miss the train.
But is that the only train to Oakhurst today?
Definitely. Oh, what an idea. Miss Brooks, I'd give $100 for the right to x-ray the remarkable gray matter in your cranial cavity.
Why, Walter, what a lovely thing to say about the cerebellum-y in my chromium.
He's asleep, Walter. Daddy's fast asleep on the couch.
I don't know how he can sleep with all that noise he's making. I'd sure hate to be your mother.
I wouldn't like that arrangement either. Now, you set back that clock over there, and I'll take care of this one on the mantle.
Okay. Let's see. It's 5:10 now. I'll just set it back an hour.
I'll do the same with this one. Then we'll take care of the clocks upstairs and in the kitchen.
Check. Oh, did you leave the front door open for Miss Brooks? She's coming over to help divert your daddy's attention until train time.
It's open, Walter. Now, you take the library clock, and I'll go up to the bedroom to see that everything's set up all right.
This way, Stretch. Mr. Conklin's asleep on the couch.
Good. Now, you want me to set this clock back an hour, right?
Right. I'll set this one back on the mantel. There.
Gosh, this sounds like an angry sea lion. I think he's waking up.
I thought it was a car backfiring.
Well, I better get out of here. Mr. Conklin and me aren't on terms.
Miss Brooks, Snodgrass.
Oh, don't get up, Mr. Conklin. Just lie there and relax. We'll all pull up chairs and chat with you for a while.
Chat with me? But why? Snodgrass, there's something I'd like to ask you.
I thought there might be.
Did you have anything to do with wrecking my car this afternoon?
I'd rather not answer that question, sir.
Why not?
Because my parents brought me up not to be no liar. Well, I gotta go to football practice now. Goodbye, Miss Brooks. See you soon, Mr. Conklin, I guess.
It's just as well he left. I shouldn't upset my temperament before the band concert. By the way, it must be getting toward train time.
Oh, no, you've got loads of time, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, what time is it?
It's 3:15. See, by that clock over there?
3:15? That's peculiar.
What's peculiar?
As I recall, I didn't lie down until 3:30.
Well, you know how swiftly time passes when you're sleeping.
It might pass swiftly, but it doesn't pass backwards. Look outside. It's almost dark.
Oh, hadn't you heard? There's an eclipse of the sun today.
Hi, Miss Brooks.
Hello, Miss Brooks. I hope you didn't wake up old Marblehead. Ooh, hi there, Miss Allen. How are you? Have a nice nap. How's every little old thing?
Oh, quiet, then. What time do you have, Harriet?
Oh, you've got plenty of time, Daddy. It's only 4:15.
4:15? But Miss Brooks says it's 3:15.
That's a democracy for you. Everyone's entitled to his own time.
Now, see here, I've got to know just where I stand with that train.
It's 4:15, Mr. Conklin. That's what the time is, actually.
Then why did you keep insisting that it was 3:15?
Once I've had a taste of daylight saving, I'm a very hard loser.
Excuse me, but the door was open, so I just...
Oh, come in. Come in, Boynton. Come in. Will you please tell me what time it is?
Oh, certainly, sir. It's...
It's 3:15.
No, it's 5:30.
Well, that's what makes horse races.
5:30? Then I haven't a minute to lose. It's a half-hour drive to the station from here. Fortunately, I'm all packed. Hand me that valise, somebody.
Here you are, Mr. Conklin.
Oh!
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Did it catch your toes?
Just a few of them, Miss. Now, I've got to get out of here. Boynton, did you drive over here?
Yes, sir, but my car...
It's too late for me to call a cab now. Will you drive me?
Me? Well, I'd like to, sir, but I've got a very important engagement in 2 minutes. It's vital, sir, and
Would you like me to drive you?
Miss Brooks, I can only answer that query by remarking that there is nothing more useless than a dead tuba player. No, no. If you don't mind, Boynton, I'll borrow your car and drive myself to the station.
Well, I guess that'll be all right, Mr. Conklin. It's parked right in front of the house.
Thank you. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, Daddy.
Bye, Mr. Conklin.
There's one more favor I'd like to ask of you, Boynton.
Yes, Mr. Conklin?
May I borrow the keys?
Certainly. Here you are, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Boynton, how could you do this to us and to yourself? Mr. Conklin will make that train to Oakhurst easily now.
Oh, no, he won't, Miss Brooks. The reason I came over here this afternoon was to borrow a few dollars.
What for?
For gasoline. There isn't enough gas in my car to take it another 8 blocks.
Mr. Boynton, I could kiss you.
So could I.
Back away, children. He's been spoken for.
Brooks returns in just a moment, but first...
Dream girl, dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight? Yes, tonight. Show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a luster cream shampoo. Luster cream, world's finest shampoo. No other shampoo in the world gives you Kay Dumit's magic blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Better than a soap, better than a liquid... Luster Cream is a dainty cream shampoo. Leaves hair 3 ways lovelier. Fragrantly clean. Free of loose dandruff. Glistening with sheen. Soft. Manageable. Even in hardest water, Luster Cream lathers instantly. So gentle, Luster Cream is wonderful even for children's hair. Tonight? Yes, tonight, try Luster Cream shampoo.
Dream girl, dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl, you owe your crowning glory to a luster cream shampoo.
And now once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, by dinner time, Mr. Conklin hadn't returned, and we assumed that Mr. Boynton's car had run out of gas, and Mr. Conklin had run out of time and missed the train to Oakhurst. But the next morning at breakfast, the phone rang, and Mrs. Davis answered.
Hello? Yes? Who? Yes, just a minute. Connie, it's for you. It's a message from Oakhurst.
Hello? This is Connie Brooks. What's the message, please? Yes, but what are you going to do for an encore?
This is Vern Smith reminding you to tune in next week for another Our Miss Brooks show brought to you by Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch.
Doctors prove Palmolive soap can bring you a lovelier complexion in 14 days. Yes, 36 leading skin specialists proved in tests on 1,285 different women that Palmolive soap facials using nothing but Palmolive brought new complexion beauty to 2 women out of 3. Just wash your face 3 times daily with Palmolive soap, each time for 60 seconds, massaging Palmolive's beauty lather onto your skin. Then rinse and pat dry. So start your Palmolive facials today. Remember, doctors prove Palmolive soap can bring you a lovelier complexion in 14 days.
If you like mysteries that are as full of chuckles as chills, be sure to hear Mr. and Mrs. North every Tuesday over this same network. Don't miss the exciting and laughable adventures of these amateur detectives. Hear Mr. and Mrs. North every Tuesday night. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamont speaking.
Stay tuned now for Jack Benny. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College.
And now, the Halls of Ivy.
The Halls of Ivy that surround us here today.
Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. Every college president to be successful must have some talent for improvisation. And all good improvising, being compounded of memory, inventiveness, and facility, the possession of these qualities makes Dr. William Todhunter Hall, Ivy's president, a gifted extemporizer. Just now, as his decorative wife, Victoria, enters the room, he's applying his knack for improvisation to the piano.
Vicky, I didn't see you come in. Possibly I had my eyes closed.
You wouldn't have seen me if you'd had them wide open, darling. I came in behind you and just sat down.
I would have known it. Because with your entrance, the room always lights up a little.
Oh. What were you playing?
Oh, I haven't the slightest idea, my sweet. My hands were on the keys, but my mind was not. I suppose I play for the same reason that some men whittle or tie trout flies or doodle on blotters. And you not being here to look at, I was just giving my eyes a rest.
From what, Toddy?
From this book. Here.
Studies in graphology. Oh, handwriting. Yeah, a new hobby?
No, I was checking various types of handwriting for a specific purpose. You note the bookmark?
Well, quite a bookmark. A check for $2,500. You must have joined the Bookie of the Month Club. What horse was it?
It's a dark horse, a horse of another color, or a horse on me, depending on the viewpoint. Oh. And you'll notice that the check is typed out to the Ivy Glee Club. The only handwriting is the signature.
Abraham Smith. Who's he?
That's what I'm trying to discover.
But why does the Glee Club want to know who Mr. Smith is? Why don't they just cash the check with a happy little cry and say, thank you, Mr. Smith, and go buy some mandolin picks?
Well, that's the problem. We want to thank the generous Mr. Smith, but we don't know who he is.
Well, ask the Ivy First National Bank. They have the account.
Well, the Ivy First National Bank states courteously but unequivocally that they cannot reveal such information. They intimated that Mr. Smith is a fictitious name used for charitable purposes. It was suggested, in bankerish terms, of course, that I let sleeping dogs lie, let well enough alone, do not stir up the mare's nest, refrain from looking gift horses in the mouth, and other assorted clichés to the effect that I should mind my own business.
But not to be rude, dear, why don't you?
Well, officially, I'm going to. But unofficially, my curiosity is so aroused.
Somebody at the door, Toddy, and I hope it's Ellery Queen or Charlie Chan or something.
Yes, I could use a little detective assistance with... Oh, well, Professor Warren,
well,
come in.
Hello, Doc. Victoria.
Hello.
I was just passing by, so I thought I wouldn't. Am I inopportune?
I should say not. In fact, you can have a key to the front door any time you want it.
Yeah. Now, sit down, Professor, and let's settle a few world problems.
Thanks, I will. Sit down, that is. But I'm afraid world problems will have to wait until... Ouch!
What's the matter? What? Is there a spring loose in that chair?
Nope. Seemed to have sat on a book. I try to get all mine bound in limp leather. Say, studies in graphology.
Yes. Yeah.
Who's going in for handwriting analysis?
William is doing some detective work. Uh-huh. I just stand around smoking my pipe and being elementary like Dr. Watson, you know.
I'm finding it quite fascinating, Joseph, when you consider that an individual's handwriting is actually a projection of his personality, the result of... I've just thought of something.
Well, why stare at me? It's perfectly permissible. Even admirable for a college president to think of something now and then. What's on your mind, son?
Are you Abraham Smith?
Who's Abraham Smith? The brother they didn't have room for on the cough drops?
No. No, and either you are an excellent actor or you're not the man I'm looking for. But it seemed quite a reasonable idea. You're the only member of the faculty I know who's financially able and would be willing to donate $2,500 to a good cause under an assumed name.
Well, thanks. But on the rare occasions when I perform any good works, I sign them Joe Warren. My credit in heaven is so overextended, and I got such a late start mending my moral fences that I can't afford to be unmodest. What's this all about?
Well, somebody's using that name. I've made a check out to the Ivy Glee Club, and William wants to find out who it is so he can thank him.
Well, to give you a little background, the Glee Club was short of funds. They couldn't buy costumes or new musical arrangements for their annual tour. And then a mysterious Abraham Smith mounts his ballpoint pen and rides to the rescue with his check.
Let's see it.
You recognize the handwriting, Professor?
Nope. But as one detective to another, you can rule out anybody in either the engineering, accounting, or medical departments. Not precise enough for an engineer or an accountant. And the first thing a medical student learns is to write so only an experienced pharmacist can read it.
I know. But I think obscurity in writing is demanded by the medical profession. You see, medical men, quite properly for the safety of the public, are conservative. Which is probably why, with the foundations of medicine going back to the Phoenicians and the Egyptians, doctors have retained the use of hieroglyphics in writing prescriptions. It lends itself admirably to the abbreviation. An abbreviation which extends even to the gowns supplied to hospital patients.
Uh-oh, here we go again.
These dreadful garments, originally designed, I'm sure, for victims of the Spanish Inquisition on their way to the stake, they do have, I suppose, some utilitarian value to the practitioners of surgery. However, when you consider that the fabric of which a hospital gown is composed, a blend of cactus fibers and low-grade sandpaper, diabolically compounded for the abrasion of both soul and epidermis, how did I get here in the hospital? Did I have a conversational accident?
Yes, you did. You were struck by a runaway digression. You got any other guesses about Abraham Smith?
This officer is someone familiar with college affairs.
And you, I thought, as a wealthy novelist.
Oh, please, please. Just because I sold myself down the literary river and typed out 450 pages of fraudulent history and busty intrigue, don't go throwing my ill-gotten gains at me. Hey, wait a minute. Let me see that check again.
Do you have a hunch, Professor?
Well, I could be wrong, but I think I've seen that typewriting somewhere. See that crooked W and that lopsided O?
Oh, yes. Yes. Where did you see it? Whose is it?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Oh.
But it was quite recently. Look, can you spare this check for a few hours?
Until tomorrow morning. I have to return it to the manager of the Glee Club, Tommy Thornhill. He seemed to think I might abscond to Guatemala with it.
Well, I'll give it to Tommy if you like. He has an early morning class with me. But I'll check this, and if I hit anything, I'll telephone.
You know, I'm finding graphology very interesting, Vicky. You see this example. You see the high stem and the slim loop. Indicates a high regard for personal dignity.
Uh-huh.
Of course, if I were to comb the student body and the faculty for someone with a high sense of dignity, the search would broaden out to some 300 people. Now, on the other hand, take this sample here.
Yes, dear. Now, where did I put this?
See, the small B with the initial hook, indicating an animated conversation list. Do we know any... Vicky?
Yes, dear. Yeah, I was listening. A sense of dignity, 300 people. I heard.
Yes, darling. Combined with a strong Darvacin and no small permalif from the Cranivers. Or am I being Mossifrite and Estebrow?
That's right. Couldn't be anything else.
Victoria.
Yes, dear.
Come home, darling. All is forgiven.
I know. 300 small bees. What? Oh, I'm sorry, Toddy. I was looking for something. Have you seen my hairpins?
Hairpins? Well, no, I don't think
I've... When I came in here, I had a little white cardboard box full of hairpins. I don't remember where I put them.
Well, I think we can eliminate Professor Warren. His scalp is so bereft of foliage that hairpins would be tonsorially obtrusive.
Oh, yes. It was exasperating. I had the box in my hand when you were playing the piano. And then when Professor Warren came in, I set the box down somewhere. Well, if that's Professor Warren, tell him if he returns my hairpins, we'll ask no embarrassing questions.
Yes, if he can tell me who Abraham Smith is, I'll buy him a permanent wave. Yes. Hall's residence? Oh, yes, Professor, yes. You did? Who? Good heavens, you're joking. Really? Well, thank you very much. Yes, yeah, I'll keep you out of it. But, Professor, I owe you a permanent wave. Which do you prefer, poodle or horse tail? Yes, I know. I'll explain it later. Goodbye. How obvious the answer was.
What?
And how readily I ignored the rules of graphology.
How?
Well, after all, the high sense of dignity, the rapid conversation, of course.
Toddy, please.
What, dear?
Don't do this to me.
Do what, darling? What?
Who was it?
Mr. Wellman. Mr. Clarence Wellman.
No.
Yes.
Why, it's hard to believe, isn't it? I take back a lot of things I've said about Mr. Wellman. Not all of them, just some.
I know. But as Coleridge said, think not of his errors now. Remember his greatness, his munificence. Think on all the lovely features of his character.
Well, let's not go mad, you know. Anyway, Sherlock, the case is closed. The mystery is solved. And you can put on your smoking jacket and play your violin.
Well, I'm sorry, Watson, but cases have been few, and I gave my violin to the landlady in lieu of rent. However, we still have the piano. Oh, my goodness, what's happened?
My hairpins.
What?
Well, I remember now. I put them on the edge of the piano. They must have fallen in.
Well, beauty's loss is music's gain. I rather like the honky-tonk effect.
This presentation of The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
As we return to The Halls of Ivy, we find Dr. and Mrs. Hall discussing Mr. Wellman, who turned out to be the mysterious Abraham Smith who sent a generous check to the Ivy Glee Club. Tommy Thornhill, the Glee Club student manager, is also present, Dr. Hall is saying.
Well, Professor Warren has the check, Tommy. He'll give it to you tomorrow.
Yes, it was Professor Warren who discovered Mr. Smith's real name.
How'd he do it, Mrs. Hall? And who was it?
Obviously someone who is closely connected with the college, but I'm afraid we can't divulge either the method or the individual, Tommy. He evidently desires anonymity, and we must respect it.
Okay, but we'd sure like to give him a few choruses of happy days. He got the Glee Club off a bad spot. Can't you even give me a hint, Dr. Hall? If I had just his last name and his phone number, I could figure the rest of it out myself.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. For one thing, a person who goes to such lengths to conceal his generous instincts would quite probably resent our prying into his identity, however much we would like to thank him.
You see, Tommy, Dr. Hall places great emphasis on good manners. He says that our social machinery is oiled by courtesy. And that please and thank you are the three little squirts that keep it running.
No, I didn't say that at all. I merely said...
I know. I added the three little squirt bit myself. Just punching up your script, you know? Anyway, Tommy, when he can't thank someone for something they've done, it hurts him.
It hurts me too, Mrs. Hall. And if Dr. Hall can think up some way we can show our appreciation without spilling any beans, we
yes,
certainly...
Thank you. I will.
Well, sounds like you've got visitors, sir. I'd better run along.
Oh, it won't be necessary, Tommy.
Good evening, Dr. Hall, Mrs. Hall. I didn't know you had...
Mr. Wellman, this is Tommy Thornhill, student manager of the Glee Club. Mr. Wellman, Tommy.
Evening, sir. Evening, Thornhill. Is this a business meeting? I mean, am I interrupting? That is, I was merely...
Not at all, Mr. Wellman. Tommy was here to see if he could find some way of thanking a mysterious benefactor of the Glee Club.
Mr. Wellman, some shy angel yanked us out of the red with $2,500, and we can't find out who he is to pin a gardenia on him.
I've told Thornhill that the donor's privacy must be respected, Mr. Wellman.
Of course. Can't go snooping into affairs like that. Man wants to help somebody without any brass flags. I mean, bands waving. What I mean is that you say you manage the Glee Club, Thorndike?
Yes, I'm the student manager, Mr. Wellman, and my name is Thornhill, not Thorndike.
Oh.
Though it was spelled M-U-D until this check came along. Now I can get the show on the road, thanks to Mr. Smith.
Smith, Mr. Wellman, the mysterious friend who sent the check. If I knew who it was, I'd give him a kiss.
Please, Mr. Hall, I don't think it calls for any such emotional display. This Smith fellow, whoever he is, must be very... By the way, I'm an old Glee Club man myself, Thorndale.
Yes, I know that, Mr. Wellman. I've seen your picture. You were a tenor, straw hat and a cane. Class of, was it 1913?
1914. Matter of fact, I was student manager myself. Had a rough time, too. No money, empty treasury. People seemed to think we traveled on freight cars and ate grass. Promises. Wrote a song about it, in fact.
Well, that's very interesting, Mr. Wellman. Then you probably know how much the club appreciates the generous Mr. Smith.
Well, I'm glad to have... glad to have had the experience myself managing the club with no money, so... Yes, I suppose they might think well of this Smith. Don't know who he is, huh?
I don't, but Dr. Hall says that
Hall says it must be someone who was close to the college, or he wouldn't have known about the Glee Club's difficulties.
Very logical, very good thinking, but I wouldn't be nosy about it. Probably some sentimental old grad, more money than sense.
By the way, Mr. Wellman, what was the song you wrote about getting all promises and no money?
not a very good song, really. Corny, I believe, is the word. Mrs. Hall would know. Called it Fair Weather Friends, with a full chorus and a good accompaniment. It didn't sound too bad, but as a solo, well... with some good music available, it was like
carrying coals to Porter.
Well put, Mrs. Hall. Well put.
Say, wait a minute. Fair Weather Friends. The one that goes like this? Fair weather friends.
Fair weather friends. Imagine anyone remembering
it. It's a lonesome old town. Where have you gone?
Yeah, well, it's obvious, Tommy, why you're the manager of the Glee Club instead of a singing
man. Now it takes a crow to find the corn for the rest of the birds, doesn't it, Tommy? Yeah, how did you know about this song?
Well, when it looked like we were short of money for new arrangements, Mrs. Hall, we started going through the trunks for some oldies. Somebody came up with this Fair Weather Friends, and it was great. Real barbershop stuff.
Really? You liked it, Thorndike?
Yeah.
My goodness, I never would have imagined my song. I'd like to hear the club sing it again sometime.
I'm sure they'll be happy to do it for you, Mr. Wellman, if only by way of thanks.
Maybe I'm a little... Thanks a lot, Dr. Hall.
For writing in 1914 what looks like a nice hot revival in 1952, Mr. Wellman.
Yes. It's as good as a donation.
Yes.
Glad you could use it, son.
Oh, we'll use it all right, sir. Well, thanks, Dr. Hall, Mrs. Hall. Nice to meet you, Mr. Wellman. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Tommy.
Hello, Tommy.
Fine boy, that Thorn Ball. Think of them... digging up my song after all these... Fair weather friends. Well, if I could remember the whole thing. May I use your piano?
Certainly, Mr. Wellman, but you won't like it. It's a little out of tune.
Well, so am I. No, let me see. Is that me, or is it the piano?
It's full of hairpins, Mr. Wellman.
Hairpins? Well, of all of us, I knew you had your little eccentricities, Dr. Hall, but filling your piano with hairpins is hardly a very... So,
Well, I didn't come here to discuss music. It's about the First National Bank of Ivy. I'm a VP, as you know. Seems that you called them trying to find out who sent that check to the Glee Club.
Well, it seemed too bad that such a generous gesture should go unthanked, Mr. Wellman.
You took it upon yourself to snoop and pry. If this mysterious contributor, who, whatever his name is...
Ezekiel Smith.
Abraham Smith.
How do you do, Mr. Smith?
You know. All the time?
No. Not all the time, no. And don't blame your bank, Mr. Wellman. They gave no information.
Someone who will be very discreet recognized your typewriting, Mr. Wellman.
But who? I mean, how? I thought I'd taken every precaution. I mean, well, even so, who had the effrontery to... I mean, look, when a man tries to remain anonymous in a thing like this, why does... Well, if his privacy isn't... can't be respected...
Mr. Wellman.
What is it, Dr. Hall?
Any prying or snooping which was done was my fault and mine alone. I simply couldn't bear the thought of such a helpful act not being acknowledged. Rest assured that your identity is known to only three people, Mrs. Hall, myself, and one other. None of us will divulge it without your permission. Now, with this assurance, permit me, on behalf of the college and the Glee Club, to express our very great thanks.
Well, you're sure nobody will... Well, I mean, if this doesn't get all over the campus, then we'll... you're welcome.
Now, how about tomorrow, Toddy?
Tomorrow? Oh, yes. Mr. Wellman...
Now what?
By way of a small celebration over having been financially rescued, the Glee Club is having a small luncheon tomorrow.
At whose expense?
Well, it's a Dutch treat, Mr. Wellman, and you are the little Dutch boy who stuck his checkbook into the dike.
Gentlemen, if I may have a minute's quiet, please. Hey, fellas, if you don't mind, I'd like to say a few words. Quiet, you lemonheads!
That's a technique we haven't used at the Board of Governors, Mr. Wellman.
Well, as chairman, I've made a note of it. Gentlemen, the Ivy Glee Club has with it this noon two very good friends. President Hall, a baritone with a steady job, who is always welcome at any fish fry of ours... And Mr. Clarence Wellman, Chairman of the Board of Governors, to whom we owe a special debt of gratitude.
Yeah. Dr. Hall, you said you wouldn't tell.
I didn't.
When it looked like we'd never get our pitch pipes off the campus, we went through the files looking for old numbers that didn't need new arrangements. And it was a song written years ago by Mr. Wellman that snapped up the repertoire. On your feet, gentlemen, and show him our top number for this year, as it was the top number, I'm sure, in 1914. Fair weather friends.
My song.
Take it, boys.
Fair weather friends, fair weather friends. This is the lonesome old town. Where have you gone, fair weather friends? Now that the ships are gone, I love a beautiful lady, but destiny loaded. Fair weather friends, this is a lonesome old town. Where have you gone, fair weather?
Gentlemen, the secret word tonight is book. B-O-O-K.
Oh, you're always saying that.
You bet your life. The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
I thought he was still hibernating for the winter. Oh, that's me, Groucho Marx. Thank you. Well, here I am again with $1,500 for one of our couples. George Fenneman, who's first to try for it?
We invited some nightclub hat check girls and some ballpark vendors to the program tonight. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Betty Schumann and Mr. Al Weissman. And here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, you beautiful people, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. I mean you, Betty. Yeah? And if you say the secret word, you'll split $100 between you. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Mr. Weissman. Oh, I've seen you before at the ballpark. Huh?
Thank you.
What ballpark do you do your hawking? Gilmore, huh?
Hollywood ballpark.
Hollywood, yeah. What kind of items do you sell to the ball fans?
Peanuts, Cracker Jacks, soda, popcorn, cushions, programs, novelties.
What kind of novelties?
Flags, hats, baseballs.
You mean if you get hot peanuts, that's a novelty? tell me, Al, is there much difference between the taste of your cushions and your popcorn?
Well, in the color.
And Betty, Schumann?
Schumann.
Schumann, huh? You're a mighty pretty girl, Betty, huh? At what nightclub are you employed, Betty?
At Ciro's.
Pretty expensive joint, isn't it?
Ciro's isn't a joint.
I'm sorry. Well, it's a pretty expensive honky-tonk, isn't it?
Ciro's isn't a honky-tonk either.
Well, at least we agree it's expensive, don't we, Betty?
Maybe for some people.
That's true. Some people do find it expensive. Only the people who go there. What do you do at Ciro's?
I'm a combination hat check and cigarette girl.
Well, you've got a very nice combination there. Well, tell me, Betty, do women check their hats in your honky-tonk?
Very rarely, mostly coats.
What kind?
Oh, chinchillas, mink, sables, Persian lambs.
You mean you have all those animals in that little room? Why do women check those valuable coats? I should think they'd never want to let them out of their sight.
Well, if they were to take them to the tables with them and they got up to dance, they'd be left all alone.
You mean some skunk had come along and go away with the mink? Do people check other things besides hats and coats?
Occasionally.
Do any of your customers ever check their husbands?
No, but I had a man check a toupee once and a woman check a girdle.
I don't know why a woman would want to check a girdle. If she stayed in a nightclub long enough, she'd be strapped anyway. Why would a woman check a girdle in a nightclub, Betty?
I don't know, sir. I didn't ask her. It wasn't any of my business.
Well, I consider it mine. The next time a woman checks her girdle in your place, you tell her I want to know why. Now, how much do you charge for checking a hat?
There is no charge.
There isn't, eh? What do you mean, no charge? In a nightclub, they charge for everything, including the air you're choking in. No charge at all?
There is no charge. You tip whatever you wish.
I see. Whatever tip I want, eh?
That's right.
Suppose I left an asparagus tip. Huh? Now, Frankfurter, take me out of the ball game. Do you get many tips like Betty gets at Zeros?
What, from those baseball fans?
I have never heard venom expressed in such simple terms. I didn't realize you were so sensitive, Al. I thought perhaps occasionally you got a foul tip. Now, what kind of a costume do you wear, Betty? And make it brief.
Well, it's strapless. It's very short. And we wear long opera hose.
Well, that's brief enough, I guess. Doesn't an outfit like that make people stare?
Well, yes. Mostly the women.
You mean the men don't stare?
Yes, but in a different way.
Naturally. Well, a man wants to see what happens to his hat, that's right. Well, you two have taught me a lot about night work. Now, let's see if you're going to be the ones who get the chance at the $1,500 question. Now, in just 1 minute, you're going to play your Bet Your Life.
When you take your car for service to a DeSoto Plymouth dealer's, notice all the special tools and equipment in the shop. The equipment that helps the expert mechanics do better, faster work on your car. Find out also about the two great new cars he sells. There's the brilliant new DeSoto, truly a magnificent car. Truly a new car, front to back. From its impressive full-width radiator grille to its smart-looking, newly designed rear end. You'll be amazed by all of its new features. You'll enjoy driving it, for DeSoto is the car that lets you drive without shifting. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. The beautiful car that likes to be compared.
Now, let's see if you two will get a chance at the $1,500. Fenneman, bring them up to date on the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that $20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $1,500 DeSoto Plymouth question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room offstage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You select the drinking songs as your category. Is that right?
That's right.
Now, here's your first question. How much of the $20 are you going to try?
Ten.
All right, $10. Here's a song everyone should know. Play, Jerry.
Sweet Adeline.
And on the way, we have $30.
$30. Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Now, how much of the $30 are you going to try?
$20.
$20. What is the name of this song? What do you think, kids? There's a tavern in the town.
They now have $10.
That's a shame. All right, now here's your third question. You have $10. How much are you going to try now?
$5.
Yeah. Give me the title of this song. Okay, Jerry.
Whip and Poop.
The Whip and Poop song.
Oh, on the way again. They're now at $15.
Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 15 will you try?
All of it.
All of it. Shoot the works. Give me the title of this song. Take a guess, kids. It's Little Brown Jug. I'm going to give you another chance to make some money. Get this one right and you win $10. Now think hard. Who is buried in Grant's tomb?
Grant.
General Grant is right. Yeah. Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, don't go away. You may get a chance at the big question. Now, before I forget it, I want to thank George Rosen and Weekly Variety for the special showmanship citation they gave us last week. It was a very high honor, and all of us on the show are sincerely grateful. Fenneman, you may proceed.
Groucho.
Yes.
The secret word is still book. It is. Perhaps the next couple will say it. We invited some hospital dietitians to the program, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Shirley Phillips. Her partner is a married man from the audience, Mr. Charlie Harvey, and here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life, and if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 between you. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Miss Phillips, Shirley Phillips.
That's right.
For a dietitian, you're a pretty tasty dish. Where are you from, Shirley?
Cedars 11 in hospital.
Were you born there?
No, I'm from San Francisco.
Oh. And Mr. Harvey? Yes. Are you one of the Harvey girls? where are you from, Charlie?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
What sort of work do you do?
I'm a former gravedigger.
Well, why did you quit? Is everybody dead? Why did you quit, huh?
I had a better chance for a job out here, so I came out here.
What are you doing now, John?
I'm a warehouse man now, sir.
What are your duties as a warehouse man?
Well, I'm filling crates now. Shipping clerk.
Same job, but you're indoors, that's all. You are married, eh, Charlie?
Yes, sir.
How did you meet your wife?
Well, she was working in Kelly's Oyster House in Philadelphia, reading tea leaves and palms.
Reading tea leaves in an oyster house, huh?
Yes, sir.
What happened?
Well, she read my tea leaves in there one time and told me that I was going to marry a widow with two children. And a while back, a little later, I came back over there and I says, well, I've looked all over town and I can't find a widow with two children. She says, well, you've been looking at her every time you come into the Kelly's Oyster House. She was a girl.
Well, did you marry her just so you wouldn't make a liar out of her? Is that why, you're not married, huh, Shirley?
No, I'm not.
Why aren't you married?
I'm not ready to get married.
How long would it take you, huh? Is that the only reason you're not married?
No. But it seems like every time I meet somebody, either they're not interested in me or I'm not interested in them.
Well, don't be discouraged. Someday you'll meet a man and neither one of you will be interested. And then you'll have something in common and you'll probably get married. Just what do you do on your job, Miss Phillips?
Well, I write diets and I check trays.
Do you make up the diet for the entire hospital?
No, I don't.
Who does that, Sherry?
The head dietitian.
The head dietitian? You mean there's a diet just for heads? Has anything unusual ever happened in your kitchen, Shirley? Like putting something appetizing on the tray? Apparently, there are a lot of ex-patients here tonight.
Well, sometimes for breakfast, we've had some people order cheese blintzes and Finn and Hattie.
Cheese blintzes and Finn and Hattie, huh? Well, it's the same plot as Abe's Irish Rose, huh? Has anything embarrassing ever happened to you, Charlie?
Well, not embarrassing. I wouldn't say embarrassing, but I was
called... Well, what would you say, huh?
I was called out of bed at 1 o'clock in the morning to go back to the cemetery.
Were you alive at the time?
Well, I was the foreman of the gravediggers, and I was the only one that had the key to the tool house. It seems that some fellow had gone through the...
Somebody was eager to get buried?
No, it seems like he had a few too many, and he was walking through the cemetery and fell in an open grave.
Just looking at you has made me hungry, Shirley. How much food should I eat in a day?
Well, that all depends upon the type of work that you do. A laborer should have about 3,000 calories, and a white-collar worker about 2,200 calories.
Well, I'm a white-collar worker, but my laundry didn't come back. Now, answer my question. How much should I eat, Shirley?
Well, what do you do?
Well, I can do 85 and the wind's with me. I not only can do 85, I am 85. Now answer my question, Shirley. How much should I eat?
Well, looks like you sit down most of the time, so... say about 1,500 calories.
That's about one meal a day, isn't it? Is there any food that's on most diets?
Oh, I'd say meat or milk.
In most cases, you'd say milk is good for the figure?
Yes.
Have you ever looked at a cow? Well, it's been nice talking to you two, and as soon as we're through here, Shirley, you and I will go out and have a banana split and some mashed potatoes. Now, let's see how well you'll make out in the battle for the $1,500 question. You're going to play your bet your life. Run your $20 into more than the other couples, and you get a chance at the big question. I can't tell you how much our first couple won, but Fenneman's offstage remind our listeners.
The nightclub girl and the ballpark vendor lost all their money, so these people have a clear field.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected well-known husbands and wives as your category. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
How much of the 20 are you going to try?
10.
David O. Selznick is married to a famous actress. What is her name?
Teresa Wright.
Do you agree with that? I'm sorry. It's Jennifer Jones.
Yeah.
And they have $10 now.
All right. Well, you're down to $10. Anyhow, you're going for $1,500 a night, and that's the big money. Now, how much of the 10 are you going to try?
Five.
$5. Who is actress Lynn Fontanne married to?
Alfred Lund.
Alfred Lund is right.
Now they have $15.
All right, now you got $15. Here's your third question. How much of the 15 are you going to try?
Ten.
Ten. Who is designer Gilbert Adrian married to?
Janet... Gaynor.
Janet Gaynor is right.
They're climbing. They have $25.
Well, you're the gainer now. Now, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 25 are you going to try?
20.
Who is Lily Pons married to?
Andre Castellanos.
Andre Castellanos.
And they wind up with $25.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And I will soon know who gets the chance at the $1,500 question.
Folks, I don't have to tell you that summer is almost here.
No, Fenneman, but you will anyway.
And summer means that the best days to drive your car are right on top of it.
I wish you'd drive more carefully.
I will, Groucho. And more enjoyably, too. Because now's the time when I and thousands like me...
I won't comment on that horrible thought.
Now's the time when we smart car owners get set for those fine summer weekends and for vacations by visiting our DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Fenneman, that's your idea of a vacation? Your family visiting a DeSoto Plymouth dealer?
Well, the time your car spends at a DeSoto Plymouth dealer's, folks, will make every mile you drive this summer more enjoyable.
That's true.
More economical.
Yes, it is.
Safer.
Yeah, and safer.
For expert service and checkup at a fair price. See your DeSoto Plymouth dealer tomorrow.
All right, Fenneman, who's leading in the race for the $1,500 question?
Well, the dietitian and the married man are ahead with $45. And the secret word is still book. We invited some sets of identical twins to the program tonight, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Janny and Joey Pope. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kiddies, for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 between you. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Identical twins, eh? I'm glad somebody told me. Otherwise, I might have accused one of you of being up here twice just to confuse me. Which one are you?
I'm Janny.
You're Janny, yeah?
Yes.
How do you do? And which one are you?
I'm Joey.
You're Joey.
Uh-huh.
You're Joey Haha? That's an Indian name, huh? Is your name Janny Haha? I've heard of Minnie Haha, but... You two certainly look alike, and I think you should know each other. Janie, shake hands with Joey, huh? Now, don't anybody move. Stay right where you are. Now, let's see. Janie, how old are you?
I'm 20 years old.
Joey, you are Joey, huh?
Yes.
Since you're identical twins, you're exactly the same age?
Yes, I'm 22.
You're 22 and she's 20?
No, I'm 20 also.
Oh, that's like Joey Haha, huh? Janie, are you working?
No, I'm going to UCLA.
And Joey, where do you work?
I go to UCLA also.
How can your teachers tell you apart?
Well, when we're together, they can tell us apart, and when we're not together, they can't tell us apart.
Why do I get involved in things like that? I I'm not a kid anymore, and you kids are not helping either. Janie, would you mind going over what she just said slowly and succinctly?
Well, what she means is that when we're separated, they can't tell us apart, but when we're together, it's easier to tell us apart.
Cocktails, anybody? Joey, does everybody have the same trouble I have?
I'm Janie, that's Joey.
Oh, this is... Answer my question. Does everybody have my trouble?
Well, yes, I guess. What's your trouble?
Well, I'll tell you, Mrs. Anthony, I come from a family of five boys. I was standing here 5 minutes ago minding my own business when suddenly I went off my rocker. Now, Janie, do you have any boyfriends? That's you, Janie, over there.
Yes, I have one.
How do your boyfriends tell you apart?
Well, they have a lot of trouble telling us apart. But on the other hand, we have trouble telling them apart because they're also identical twins. We all get mixed up.
Have you ever played any tricks on your boyfriends?
Well, for instance, one day I walked into class and this boy ran up to me and said, Joey, and I didn't want to say I was Janie. I said, yes, and he said, can you go out Saturday night? And I said, I'd love to because Joey hadn't made a date for Saturday night. So Joey walked in and I told her and she already made a date, so I had to go out with him. And so we both happened to end up at the same place and I introduced the boy and he said, well, which one is Joey? And we wouldn't tell them and... They still don't know to this day.
I guess it's just as well. Have you any experiences like that that you'd care to relate, Joey? That's you, Joey, over here.
Well, in high school, we had quite a lot of fun. Janie was better in geometry, and I was better in history. And I flunked a geometry test once, and so I had to make it up after school. So Janie went and took it in my place. The answers, and so she brought the blue book up to the teacher.
Joey, that did it. You just said book, and since that's the secret word for tonight, you and your partner spent $100 in cash, compliments of the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America.
Oh, thank you.
Now, where were we when you dented my checkbook?
Well, I brought the blue book up to the teacher, and as I was handing it to her, we both wear different rings, and I forgot to change my ring, and that's the only way the teacher could tell us apart, and she knew I had a pearl ring, and this girl that brought it up had a ruby ring, so she caught us in the act, but she was very nice about it.
Just kicked you out of school, huh? Well, Joey, you two not only look exactly alike, but you even dress exactly alike. Do you always dress the same?
Oh, yes.
What about boyfriends? Do you like the same boyfriends?
Oh, no. We've been very lucky about it.
Yeah. Your taste is quite
very
different.
Much the same, twins. But yeah? The twins are alike, so it doesn't make any difference who goes with who.
You don't care which one you get, huh?
No.
I guess when you've seen one twin, you've seen them all. Well, it's certainly been nice looking at you girls. Now we're going to see if two heads are better than one. You're going to play your bet your life. You beat the other couples, and you'll get a chance at the $1,500 DeSoto Plymouth question. I can't tell you how much the other two couples won, but Fenneman's going to remind our listeners.
The dietitian and the husband are ahead with $45.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected animals and birds of fact and fiction as your category. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. Now you have $20. How much are you going to try?
$10, Harpo.
$10. Harpo, right?
Rachel!
My name happens to be Al Ritz. All right, Janie, that's you over here.
No, I'm Joey.
Oh, no, not you. From now on, you're Janie, eh? And you're one of the Dolly sisters. You're going to try $10, and what animal do you associate with Mrs. O'Leary?
Cow.
A cow is right.
They have $30.
All right, now you got $30. Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
20.
What bird do you associate with Edgar Allan Poe?
Raven.
The raven is right.
They're climbing. We have $50.
All right, you got $50. Here's your third question. How much are you going to try?
30, I think.
30. All right. What bird do you associate with the Ancient Mariner?
Wait a minute now. The seagull. It was a dove. No, it was a gull. We just studied that last week.
Well, I don't think you had your mind on it at the time, though. It's the albatross.
Oh, yes.
They now have $20.
Well, you've still got $20. Now, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 20 are you going to try?
All of it.
What invisible animal do you associate with Frank Fay in a successful Broadway
play? Rabbit.
The rabbit is right.
They wind up with $40, and that means the dietitian and the husband with $45 get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question. When your car needs attention, it's important to get the very best service you can get. That's why you should always drive in at the sign of a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. For there's where you get a top service job every time. Expert factory-trained mechanics, working with factory-approved tools and equipment, do better work on your car, and they do it faster. That means money in your pocket. Add to this a DeSoto Plymouth dealer's constant desire to treat you fairly and squarely, and you have all the reasons why it will pay you next time your car needs attention to take it to a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And here's the dietitian and the husband, the winning couple, all ready for the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question, Groucho.
Here we go for $1,500. Ready? I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so think carefully and please no help in the audience. Here it is. Children the world over know about American Indians and early pioneers because of the writings of one of our greatest authors. He wrote The Deer Slayer and The Last of the Mohicans, among others. Who was this man? All right, what's the answer you two have decided upon?
I think it's James Oliver Kirkwood.
No, you had the first name right, but I'm sorry, Charlie. It's James Fenimore Cooper, so that means the big question next week will be worth $2,000. Well, you lost the big money, but you won $45 in the quiz. Congratulations, and thanks to both of you.
You Bet Your Life is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, You Bet Your Life, presented by the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation. And don't forget, next week, the big question will be worth $2,000.
Good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council. When driving, look ahead of the vehicle ahead to give yourself more stopping distance. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast. Mm-hmm.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do, and so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.